Hello and welcome to The Undermind, a podcast about AI development for StarCraft Brood War. I'm your host Shonko, I make computers do things. Let's begin. Hello everyone, my guests today are Bruce Ninzen, aka Locutus, our new guest.
Hello audience.
And from last week, a returning guest, Nathan Roth, aka Antiga.
Pleased to be back.
Alright, we have some new topics to discuss. I think it's an exciting time because the SSC AIT tournament is just 2 weeks away. We have some changes on the ladder. Crazio is back on top for 4-1. What do you think about these?
It's an interesting time. You know, every year prior to the tournament, there's a lot of sort of jockeying for position, and bot development is going on in earnest. People are burning the midnight oil, getting ready.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime there's the number one spot changing frequently, it's exciting. And I think definitely Crazio has earned to stay on top for a while yet.
Locutus, since you're the new guest here, and you were fourth on the ladder last time I checked, would you mind saying a few words about yourself? How did you get into this scene? What motivates you? And basically anything related to bot development.
Yeah, well, I played StarCraft very, very casually while I was in university with my roommates who were luckily even worse than I was. So I kind of know how the game works from a very basic level, and kind of ran across the SSC AIT casts a couple of years ago and started watching them, and kind of knew that if I ever started developing a bot, I would get obsessed with it, so I tried to hold myself away from it as much as possible, but eventually I just couldn't resist and decided to start a bot. And as far as my, like, I don't know, motivations for doing it, it's really just a hobby. Instead of playing games, why not, you know, make a computer play games? That's even more fun.
I can relate.
I've heard that you're taking Locutus apart a little bit to do a more substantial rebuild. I don't know if you're going to talk about any of that. I know it's competitive stuff, but is that correct? Are you doing some sort of major revamp?
Yes, I think I kind of came to the conclusion or realization that if I wanted to really work on this for a while, I needed to kind of get it to a place where the foundations were something that I was really comfortable with and were like not trying to fit myself into somebody else's architecture, if that makes sense. So I'm kind of looking at some of the fundamentals and rewriting some of that while still taking the stuff that I've built on top of Steamhammer along with me. So it's not like the past 8 months have been wasted effort. It's just mainly making the bot more my own, I guess you could say.
I think the saying applies here that time you enjoyed wasting is not wasted, really.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, like, the fact that there are so many forks of the current Locutus out there right now is also a motivating factor, that now I kind of want to make it something different and I don't know, bring a bit more uniqueness back to this.
Would you turn your face away from your children?
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a joke in here somewhere about children you didn't know existed until they suddenly show up, right?
Definitely.
Can you talk a little bit more about the licensing change and how that came about and where that exists at the current time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess after the realization that there was going to be a lot of Locutus forks in AWID, I kind of figured there needed to be something done. I kind of see it as me being a bit naive about just, you know, throwing it out there and seeing what happened. So, at the very least, I'm going to be limiting either how much source code I release or what you can do with it. It's not an intention to make it a completely closed garden and completely cut off people from using any of it, but I just want to see some significant changes before people put it into tournaments. So exactly how that'll look, I don't know. I haven't released any source publicly since the AIDE submission. So we'll see. We'll see where it turns out. But I definitely feel bad for my, I don't know, fellow competitors in the tournaments where they've been up against a lot of forks of my bots and have gotten a lower placement than I think they deserve. So I definitely want to try to prevent that from happening.
This kind of side effect of being successful, since you've been one time on the top of the ladder, congratulations for that. And before that, I didn't see any Locutus forks. Surely that must be related. I mean, no one forked Jumpy Dog GoBot as of yet.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do see it as a form of flattery, and I don't have anything, like, I don't have any personal issues with there being other forks in the tournaments or placing behind other forks. I mean, I see it as a reflection of the work I've done on it as well. I just don't think it should be the case where you have, you know, five occupying five places in a row in a tournament. It seems kind of silly.
It actually inspired me to make some changes to AIST, which is a tournament that occurs in the spring that I run, to modify the rule set somewhat. You know, so even I had to put a number on it somewhere, but basically my guideline for even open source bots is to require at least a 15% code base difference and not have the changes just be fluff, right? And require source so I can compare. Which I'm not sure how, you know, it's a really hard thing to quantify because people can make a lot of fluff, but at least requiring some level of code base changes or permission from the main author, even for open source forks for a tournament competition, is the route that I'm kind of going. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much the only way you can do it. Is putting a number on it. It's either that or just say it's completely subjective, but then you're opening yourself up to various criticisms afterwards. I mean, for me, there's kind of two motivations for doing limiting it. It's the one thing is, you know, making sure people have earned it if they get a top spot. It's actually not something I'm that worried about because for me, yeah, I want to make my bot as competitive as possible, but I'm not like doing this to win. I'm doing it because I enjoy doing it. But I mean, the other thing is just not having a tournament where half of the bots play almost exactly the same, which just makes it really boring. So for something like AIST, it's like, yeah, you know, Igor is not going to update Iron to play on the maps, but if somebody else went in and did it, it would be, a contribution to the quality of the tournament. But whether, you know, that week or two of work then makes it okay for that person to get whatever first place, second place, that kind of thing is kind of a different discussion.
I think this relates somewhat to a topic we discussed last week, which is regarding frameworks passing the torch, because it's natural that some people abandon their hobby projects. And for frameworks, it's more unfortunate because they need to be maintained, kind of. But for bots, it's a little bit different. And say you would abandon this, then I think you wouldn't mind someone carrying the torch and upgrading your bot and making something better.
No, you're not wrong at all. And definitely, I mean, even if I start releasing source with the license condition that, you know, you can't enter into tournaments without my permission, if at some point I get tired of this and decide to completely stop development, I'll just release it completely open, probably maybe with a bit of delay, just to not, you know, end up with the same situation as we have now with having lots of the same bot in one tournament.
Your bot is kind of an interesting situation because really the original parts of Steam Hammer and UAB would still have to be licensed under their original set. So Uterbot would be like triple licensed or something, like with your own license plus MIT plus whatever else, you know, for some of the different like BWB and different functions that you have within the bot. You've actually got several licenses, which is really kind of difficult for a project to have multiple things and different parts and all of that. Lacutus is one of the great things that's amazed me about it is how many pieces you have from different areas that are combined into a whole. Is really very impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely made it a lot easier to get started with the bot. And I mean, it's a testament to the great work that all of the other people have done that have, you know, contributed to those building blocks. And I guess, like, yeah, like I said earlier, like the motivation for me kind of ripping out some of the internals and starting a bit fresh is to kind of, you know, say I'm serious about this and I want to make the bot more myself as well, and not just, you know, Steam Hammer with a bunch of Protoss specific bug fixes and some new strategies and that kind of thing.
Steam Hammer, but more yellow. Also, can I ask, do you have any professional background in AI or anything related to the AI development, your bot development in your professional life? If you don't want to talk about your private life, that's okay.
Oh, no, that's no problem. Well, I mean, I'm a software engineer by trade and have been doing this for like 15 years. So I'm a pretty experienced developer. As far as AI goes, I do actually work with AI at my job, but it's not really related to game AI development at all. It's more like fraud detection and that kind of thing. And I mean, I'm probably somewhat unique in that I'm a bot developer, but I do more AI at work than I do in my bot, at least as it is now. Yeah, but I mean, so for me, this is pretty much a side project that has very little to do with what I otherwise do. Same with language. I mean, I'm developing in C++ as kind of like a hobby. I like C++. I always like kind of the low level stuff, but at work, I'm, you know, in C# or JavaScript land.
It's kind of the same for me. Only thing common with my job and with my bot development is the Java language. That's all. Okay, next topic. Tournaments and ladders and everything. We talked briefly about SSE AIT. There is a new ladder named Basil, I think. Yeah, that's how it's named. It's basically SSE AIT, but without the voting. I think Bytekeeper is the author of that. I don't actually know that many other ladders or tournaments. Would you mind educating me and the audience about them?
There's been several ladders over time, notably Sail, Crazio's ladder, and there's been some other sort of smaller ones in the past, but his is one of the larger ones. But the main difference with Basil is it runs on the SC Docker platform instead of Tournament Manager, and the VM system of SSC AIT and like many other tournaments. And there's no voting at all, and the bots play quite a lot more games. Bots are averaging about 30 games a day per bot, which is really quite good. You get a lot of immediate feedback within, you know, 24 to 48 hours if you make a change after the upload delay, which I think is 6 hours currently. You know, you really get pretty good feedback that's immediate. SSC AIT, you know, if you're not a top 10 bot and you don't get voted in, oftentimes you might only get 2 or 3 games a week. Which is really kind of unfortunate. And it really doesn't provide enough feedback to use as a development platform, whereas Basil seems to do a lot of that. Basil does have some small issues with a couple bots don't work quite properly, and there's a little bit of crashiness going on. But overall, I think that the ELO and rankings are a lot more reflective of true bot performance and relative bot ability perhaps, than SSCAIT at the current time.
Yeah, but you could argue that has less entertainment value than SSCAIT, where the popular bots get voted in.
Yes, of course. I mean, there's a tournament system that plays bot games at Basil's rate would be impossible to watch. The games on average last like 130 seconds, less than 2 minutes, and it's just a blur at that speed because they're playing them as fast as possible. So really there's no watch value other than going through and looking at the replays and doing data analysis and things like that. And it makes a lot of sense to have something like SSCAIT where you can use voting and it's enjoyable to watch and it plays the good bots repeatedly. You know, really, to be honest, to a human viewer, 90% of the bot games are pretty unwatchable, frankly. Either for not being competitive or super buggy. That said, there is sometimes a very true gem of super potato, of true terribleness that is so great that we give it to Nep to stream on SSCAIT for the weekly cast and torture him.
I felt that little tongue-in-cheek, and maybe referring to my last participation. it's perfectly fine. I know that my bot is a big piece of potato at this moment, and I actually laughed out loud on that cast.
Sometimes the best stuff is the worst stuff.
Exactly. And yes, it is not of great entertainment value, but it is a tremendous resource for bot authors, especially the ones that do some kind of learning or I don't know, yeah, machine learning type of stuff on their bots.
It's been a really rough thing for some of the top competitors because not only do you have to develop a bot, but you need to develop a testing environment so that you can analyze and do games. And having something like Basil removes some of the need to create all that yourself. And all these different people were trying to set up their own bot testing environments. And you know, unless you're trying to do machine learning and you need even higher game counts, Basil, for most purposes, is probably an acceptable replacement for local testing solutions, which I'm all for removing that burden from mid to high tier competitors.
Yeah, it's another barrier of entry removed, and that's a good thing. Does Locutus have, I mean the bot, have any kind of learning algorithm built in it?
It just has learning for the openings and what it expects the opponent to do. Basically the same kind of thing as what Steamhammer has, just a bit tweaked.
All right, then moving on. This reminds me of another topic, which is the metagaming going on during and especially before the tournaments occur, like not uploading your newest bot, trying to figure out other bots and such things. I remember when Seda just exploded in the scene and got to the top place. Long-time rivals endlessly debated how to defeat it and work together, and it was so funny. I saw a level of collaboration on the channels I haven't been before. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that I chose to kind of take the approach that I would push my updates until a month before a tournament, and I wanted to do this to kind of, I mean, partially because I'm built on a bunch of other bots, and I don't think it would be fair to them if I just kind of, you know, took most of their work and then held everything very, you know, close to my chest, and then suddenly, you know, submitted for some tournament with something completely new. And also just because if most bots are only updating once or twice a year, then we don't have anything to kind of propel us forward. Like, my bot would be way worse now if I didn't have other bots to train against that were also being updated, you know, regularly.
I think there's updating to the ladder itself for SSCAIT is an interesting thing. There's a balance to be had. A lot of people do a lot of local development, and then they upload to the ladder, and they find that their bot doesn't quite work as they intended.
What
there's some performance restrictions and other things that are a little bit different with and how the bot works within a VM and things like that that you have to check prior to tournaments and have some experience with. So especially to new developers, that you know, really the recommendation has been just update it. Don't worry about hiding stuff, especially if you're, you know, a new or mid-level developer. That's not really helpful to you. It's the bugs that are found on ladder are often things that you don't expect and are unusual, and bots play weird stuff against you that break your bot in interesting and unique ways. On the other hand, you know, for the people who are really trying to win a tournament, there's some disadvantages for being up on the ladder all the time. And people do a lot of testing against your bot that's available. Thing. I think what Lucus has done, you know, where you sort of release pretty regularly, but then you pause a few weeks before a tournament and do a bunch of special preparation, is really sort of a wise approach. And it's very similar to what several other top competitors do as well.
By the way, I'm forging a completely false narrative here, because there is no real rivalry among both authors, as I saw. It's a very collaborative effort, and maybe some bragging rights are coming with being high on the ladder, but there is absolutely no hostility here.
I would say that over time it's become more competitive. You know, there's sort of, you know, the people who come from research backgrounds who are perhaps less so, and people who have sort of a competitive spirit. I would say that Crazy was probably one of the more competitive in attitude people. You know, he wants to win and be competitive. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, he often sort of tries to mislead on whether he'll participate in a given year. And sometimes he plays in it and sometimes he doesn't. You know, just sort of one of those 50-50 coin flip things. But, you know, several other people are sort of in that also competitive vein, and companies are becoming involved. You have Facebook and the Samsung Development Group and a couple of universities who are fairly serious, along with Fractal Industries, that are all, you know, have corporate sponsorship and money and development time, and there's some pride in, you know, maybe win or not win, but doing well and putting on a good show to show that the money and time invested in the project is well spent.
Yeah, and especially for the companies, there's the risk of bad press, right? Like last year when CherryPie, you know, they were a very new bot, they hadn't had very much time to work on it, and they lost in AIIDE, and the headlines are, you know, Facebook beaten by hobbyists and that kind of thing, which is completely unfair for anybody who knows how it actually works. But I mean, definitely you could kind of see after that they were keeping things a lot more tight and really trying to avoid that kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, but public perception is one thing, and I think this is still a very niche thing, this bot tournament, and it still has this atmosphere of collaboration and friendliness. So being competitive does not mean you are being hostile. Crazio is a perfect example, because he's very friendly in conversations. He's helping out people with their coding, as far as I saw. But yeah, he's very competitive, and nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. He takes it as a pretty serious endeavor, and I see more of that among other competitors as well. As the years have gone by, it's become an increasingly competitive endeavor. There's more bots, there's more money, there's more funding, and winning means more, you know, as the years have gone by.
Yes, it's only natural. But there is like a sportsmanship. Basically, that was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I've definitely felt very welcomed into the community, and have always gotten very, very quick feedback whenever I've needed help with anything. So yeah, thanks to everybody. It's been great to get started with this.
I felt the same way when I was starting with Dotbot development too. Oh, let's mention here that Dan Gant, the author of Purple Wave, was very friendly and welcoming and just overly helpful with me, and it was such a good feeling. But he's not the only one, just the most prominent example. So yeah, hashtag team Dan.
Dan is awesome.
And regarding Dan, let's talk about the meme builds some people did. Bots that executed builds somehow successfully, which were completely idiotic. I think Dan is the one who is working now on a Arbiter plus Canon build, where the Arbiter just stasises your units, and then and a probe comes and builds cannons around them.
That would be quite funny. There's been a lot of stuff like that. You know, everything from nuke builds to all sorts of weird Ling stuff to proxy hatcheries to building pylons in other people's bases. Hint, hint, somebody that might be here does that sometimes. There's a bunch of stuff like that. It's really very entertaining and creative ways to exploit a lot of algorithms and systems.
I'd say, at least for me, like, when you've been working on, you know, the proper ways to play for a while, you kind of get tired of that and just need to let loose a bit and do crazy stuff like build pylons all over the place.
Sometimes these are completely accidental and completely hilarious, and sometimes they are just someone does it for the lulz and it succeeds. Like I think the Bunker Rush builds started out that way.
Yeah, and Bunker, I think definitely when we're now seeing, you know, Cherry Pie and Seda and those kinds of bots, a lot of us, you know, non-funded, non-full-time developers are going to need to be creative with this kind of cheesy stuff to be competitive, I think.
Oh yeah, embrace the cheese.
Good friend once said that StarCraft is nothing but a mountain of cheese, and winning in the mid game is just because your cheese didn't work. So it's just it's all winning by any means, and if it works, it works, and that's great. And bots find some really strange ways to be successful.
Oh yeah, I had a great debate on this, because I think there are emergent gameplays and tactics that only bots can execute. And not only that, but eventually we will see tactics that bots can discover by themselves. I think there was a story in StarCraft 2 when a bot accidentally discovered a more optimized build than any pro gamers that at that point. I think this can be done in Brood War.
Likely so. And actually, build order creation for bots is a very interesting topic to itself, and using generated programs and systems to on the fly generate optimized build orders with specific goals in mind. There have been many attempts at that with Brood War, and several on the StarCraft 2 side as well, and it's really interesting things have come out of that. And some more successful than others.
I think it is also inevitable that at some point, when we, you know, get the machine learning really working, that it's just going to come up with all kinds of crazy stuff that nobody ever thought of before, or people thought of, but nobody would ever be able to actually do it as a human.
I think your Dragoon Micro is maybe a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an example of it at a kind of small scale, right? I mean, it's nothing that is completely unheard of or groundbreaking or anything. It's just, you know, doing stuff so quickly that nobody would be able to do it manually. And it'll be interesting to see that kind of scale up to, you know, unit mixes and tactics and that kind of thing.
Have you experimented with real pathing with your Dragoons, both on the retreat and attack side and things like that?
I haven't really worked on that much, just because I really knew that I needed to do a fundamental change to how all of the combat stuff was organized, which is actually what Jay has ended up doing with Steamhammer in the meantime, with, you know, doing clustering and handling the clustering as separate things. So I'm going to need to build something similar, or at least at the same scale of, I don't know, rethinking it before I can really do that effectively.
I think there's a lack of use of real pathing with early combat units that is really quite underestimated. It's one of the things that's sort of interesting to me that, you know, as a human, I can four-pull, with very few exceptions, almost every bot on the ladder. The exceptions I can count on one hand, that in bot world, defeat four-pull with ease. And the majority of the bots do, yes. And it's due to bots only thinking linearly as attack, defense, sort of along a line. You know, they come to the base, they see a bunker, and they back up. They don't track around the base and look for holes and things to exploit and kill to eventually take out the opponent with the wings. And similarly with, you know, Proxy 2-Gate Zealots, you know, if some bots are fairly successful with it, but if the Zealots just passed around, pathed around inside the base and looked for holes and took out units, you know, I'm quite a bit more successful as a human with Proxy 2-Gate Zealots than the bots are. So I think there's quite a bit of untapped potential there in the pathing area.
I completely agree, and I'm actually working on that right now. Pathfinding is so beneficial to your bot, especially threat-aware pathfinding, which is like a pet peeve of a lot of people. Because just avoiding threats and remembering and not being oblivious to that fucking siege tank there is going to improve a lot of bots.
Yeah, and it's also an area where it will really benefit from going more towards a machine learning approach from a rules-based approach, because I think, like, regardless of how the pathing is done, just the way that I did my proxy 2-gate was, you know, say a whole bunch of rules. Like, if I see one other Dragoon on the enemy, then I, you know, pull back a bit and start switching my tech and all that kind of thing, because I have no way of really, like, building all the rules of, like, oh, well, if the Dragoon's over there, then I can corner it, but if it's over here, then it has a lot of room to move, then I need to give up, and that kind of thing.
Yes, and getting from point A to point B is basically a solved problem, even in Brood War. Yet, somehow, a lot of bots have problems with this. And it's understandable, because bot authors have a limited amount of time and they consider other things important. See, still, it's so a visible flaw that everyone just wants to, no, don't do that, don't get stuck, it's so simple not to do that. In reality it isn't, but yeah, it's so visible.
A good example of this is, I actually, a couple weeks ago, me and McRae were having a really long conversation about pathing through choke points, and just creating a simple test map where you put 50 units on one side, and you have a small choke point, and use a stopwatch to see how long it takes to shove all the units from one side to the other, right, through the choke. And this is really not a trivial problem, especially when attacking or retreating through choke points. The speed at which you can get an army through a finite space, it ends up being fairly important as a technical challenge. And there's a lot of things that you can do as far as padding to help it, but it depends on the unit sizes, the hitboxes. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that impacts the speed at which you can do that and the efficiency of that process. And I think it's an area that deserves a lot of research and time as far as investment. I was reading a paper about drone pathfinding, where, you know, where they take a bunch of drones and try and put them through a hoop and get on the other side of the hoop. And there was actually some stuff that looked really applicable here, that we could use or maybe send back to be used in airfield as well. Because it's really a similar type of problem. It's moving objects, a group of objects, through a finite space, and how you do that efficiently and quickly.
Yeah, and choke points and area control are a very big part of games nowadays, especially when Terran is involved.
Lukutis, have you ever played around, you know, your goons kite in reverse, have you ever tried having them kite forward in aggression, where they, you know, do stutter step forward more like a human would? Is that an area that you've experimented with? There's been some discussions about doing that with goons, but I've never seen anyone actually implement a solution or try it in the world.
They actually do it in some specific cases, like if they're attacking units that are, like, melee units that aren't charging towards them, but it's really only doing it in cases where it's absolutely sure it isn't the wrong thing to do, rather than being, you know, more intelligent about doing it whenever it would be beneficial.
That's really cool that you have some implementation of that. That's really very interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is that my goons won't always kite directly backwards. If they know that they have a friendly unit right behind them, then they'll try to kite towards the sides as well, which has a kind of fan-out effect if they're in open terrain, which was a pretty big boost to the micro skills.
Speaking of kiting and choke points, another point I wanted to touch is the current map pool. I was having a conversation about this recently, and to best of my knowledge, the current map pool is taken from human tournaments, and basically just said, okay, if it's good enough for humans, then let's just use the same maps and let bots fight it out there. Do you think we would benefit from some new maps, maybe even some wacky ones with glitched neutral units and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely at some point we're going to need some new maps, because, I mean, it's been a long time since the SSCIAT map pool was defined. I'm not an expert on human maps and what there is out there, but I think there's definitely a benefit to using human maps, as it gives, you know, viewers of the stream or people joining the community something that they can kind of tangibly see that, yeah, this is the Brood War I recognize in some way. But obviously some of the newer maps we've seen, like the ones in AIST Season 1, are difficult for bots, since, you know, the human game has changed and gone more towards, you know, kind of wacky stuff that isn't necessarily that difficult for a human to get their mind around, but kind of breaks the game from a bot's perspective, since it's just so foreign to them.
I've got a lot to say on this topic. being the poor soul that runs AIST, you know, that I try and with AIST, I try and tie the AIST map pool to the most current or most recent professional season of play. So AIST Season 2 is based around KSL Season 2 map pool. And one of the things that's really interesting is as the play level increases in botland, I start to see that map selection has a larger and larger impact on play, and it has a pretty extreme effect on build order selection and strategy selection at the human level. And the SSCIAT map pool is, it's about 10 years old, and people have learned a lot about maps and game balance since it was put into use. And, about half the maps pools in SSCIAT have bugs or other issues that weren't known about in map creation at the time, or they have balance issues. You know, in human world, maps are balanced around trying to have a 50% win rate for all the races, right, on average, at the professional level. And that's the ideal. And what that does is it tries to even them all out. And some of the maps in the SSCIT pool are biased, you know, 70-30, some of the worst ones, in favor of a specific race in a specific matchup, which makes it a little unbalanced in some areas. And I would like to see it updated, but I'm unsure about that. because of the difficulty of developing and using map analysis tools currently for bots, having a static map pool is very efficient for bot development. Map analysis is actually sort of a sub-area of AI development that's fairly difficult. And really, there's only two or three fairly good tools that are used to do so, and they only really support general purpose maps at the current time. And struggle with some of the more unique examples.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like when you have a new map in human land, like all of the pros are going to need to spend quite a lot of time with that map to kind of learn how it works. And a bot really isn't any different. Either the bot code needs to be so good that the bot can play on it a lot and figure it out itself, or the bot author needs to code in those smarts. So either way, I mean, it's at least at the level we're at now, it's a big time investment to add a new map that does anything out of the ordinary.
There's also a sort of technical limitation. There's something called ramp vortexes, which really, until SCR came out, StarCraft Remastered came out, and SCM Draft was updated with new map analysis tools in 2017, there wasn't a secondary dive to really go in and understand the map pool. And there have been a lot of updates and a high level of understanding about how to make maps to minimize pathing issues using the updated tools that are currently available, that are really pretty important for map creation and design, and then that affects the gameplay as well on the map. So really, in my mind, once those tools were developed in late 2017, all the maps that were made prior to those discoveries, which really, you know, late 2017, early 2018, they all suffer from not having those pathing optimizations, having ramp vortexes, you know, and those issues that, in my opinion, you know, at a high level of play, perhaps disqualify them from play at a professional level, which is really unfortunate, you know, to say to every map that's prior than fall 2017 is perhaps not, shouldn't be used for professional use. I know that's hard to say, but that's sort of my opinion, and, you know, it's sort of reflective in pro pool map selection.
But then again, and that's just my opinion, bot games are still not human games, and we just could upload some wacky maps for the laws, but we could see very interesting matches. For example, two examples come into my mind. The first is island maps, because expanding from an island is something that probably not a lot of bots can do. That's just my impression. And another thing is like the largest maps, because the maps are optimized to a size that provides enjoyable games for the audience, I mean. But I'm not sure we wouldn't enjoy bots battling it out for eternity in a very large map. I'm curious how that would turn out.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and I mean, definitely for the viewers of the bot games, it's you know, sped up, so a game taking 2 hours of game time can be watched in 10 minutes, and you can see all the highlights, right? So yeah, it's a good point. And on the topic of island maps, I mean, if there had been an island map in the SSCAIT pool from the start, then you would probably see 80% of the bots being able to expand to islands, right? So it's something that would kind of drive things forward in some way. even if the map itself wasn't balanced or had other issues.
It's something that Nepeta never fails to mention in the cast, that bots are lacking the capability to just take island expansions. I think one or two bots do.
Yeah, there are a few maps in the pool that have them, and the advantages in most cases on those maps only come up in rare circumstances, unfortunately, which really sort of has discouraged development on that city. They had an island map as part of the first season of AIST, and really it restricted participation to people who are going to make special modifications for that map alone. But I think that that encourages development at some level, and really a high level bot should be able to play on an island. It's something that's been part of StarCraft for most of its history.
Could Locutus expand from an island?
No, not right now. And I mean, it's just a prioritization issue, right? Like, I'm at the level we're at now, no bot is losing a game because they can't expand to an island. So it really requires either being bored and deciding to do it just for fun, or kind of, I don't know, just like doing it as something to make the bot more interesting, which is also a good reason for doing it.
I do have to give a shout out while we're on this topic to Nitcat. His bot, while not sort of in the top level of SSCIAT competitive bots, supports a lot of interesting features that are normally not available on bots. It's capable of playing on, for instance, fastest maps and very large maps, and can play with teammates and things like that that most bots do not incorporate as features. So if you are interested in learning about a bot or playing with a bot as a partner, for example, Nitcat's bots family is one of the few that is capable of some of those functions.
The beauty of this scene is that setting up a new tournament is, well, not easy, but doable. So if someone would set up a tournament with only wacky maps, authors just easily upload their bots there. I think maybe we should do this. I mean, in general, not me. I just love telling other people what to do.
I'll do what I can. I think my goals with AIST are to provide a bot tournament that is very as close as reasonably possible to a human tournament in structure. As part of that, I'm tied in the goal of doing that. I'm tied to the human map pool, but interesting maps end up in there. The first season of AIST probably had a much more difficult map pool than AIST season 2, but season 3 of AIST may have a very difficult one, a very unusual map. So I don't know. Very reflective of the map. The pro pool makes it flexible.
Yeah, kind of why I mentioned the different tournaments. I didn't see any good site that just have them in one place. Like, if I'm a new bot author, I probably would want to upload my bot to many places. Maybe I will do this in the future and just post an article about various bot tournaments and the flavor of them.
I think it would help. You get AIST, CIG, SSCIAT, Samsung has their own internal tournament for their own developers. There's AITT now. And so there's really a good half dozen that are quite interesting.
Yeah, the next step could be just having some continuous integration that uploads the bot everywhere, like Jenkins for bots.
The bots require... Some of the tournaments require very different bot configurations of read and write files and how you do directories and manage the bot itself, which is really unfortunate that some of that is not standardized, but you have to really read the rules carefully, and many people have gotten burned by not doing so.
And I was also completely not serious, and I was just trying to joke with this. But yeah, you get a great point here. Okay, We talked about island maps and taking the island expansions, and there are some other glaring flaws in the bots. Another thing is Nepeta does not fail to mention is getting the scouting SCV, and yes, that's something that maybe should get more attention. What are your thoughts on that and other glaring flaws that you would like to see fixed in your own bots or in general?
Yeah, I mean, specifically catching the enemy scout is it's like another one of those things where it's not an easy thing. It may look easy when a human does it. You know, you just put your first marine here and then the scout comes by and it shoots it. But I mean, for a bot, you need to think about that a bit. So it's another one of those things where, unless you're actually losing games because of it, there's probably something else you'd rather spend your time on. But yeah, I mean, for me, you know, it's just I've kind of fixed all of the easy stuff to fix. So now it's just the general facepalming of, you know, walking in and out of tank fire, which is irritatingly hard to fix, and that kind of stuff really requires, you know, going back and taking a different approach, and that's something that you need to do every once in a while.
You just need to use coding and algorithms. What's so difficult?
I've used so many coding and algorithms, and it's just not. I mean, it might be using the wrong code.
Obviously.
It's really easy. You just type win equals one, and that's your code.
Yeah, if losing, then don't.
Yes. No, but you know, I think there's a lot of areas that bots are pretty weak. You know, I think we're going to see an explosion of real pathing. There's several people working on it, notably McGrave, he goes by Fox as well. He's got a bunch of stuff cooking on that front. As well as several other people. I think that's really an area that we're going to see a lot of work done, both on attack, defense side, building placement, pathing around units, pathing through chokes. There's going to be a bunch of work that's done in that area. Something else that's really interesting is I really can't believe we don't have a really high cannon rush bot on the ladder. I think it's an unfortunate omission. Ire is really old and does it in a pretty ineffective way, but with the modern building placement systems that some of the bots have, it shouldn't be too rough of an endeavor to work on, but a really good one would be quite scary and something that doesn't exist at the current time.
Actually, the map analysis and pathfinding frameworks are quite old. As I gather, there is not a currently maintained one, or am I wrong about this?
McGraves is probably the only one that is being developed very actively, and it's BWEB is the name of it, which you can read up about, but it supports a lot of different placement functions. And wall lines and things like that, which the wall line code, I was talking with McGrave, in theory could be used for a cannon rush bot to wall the cannons in pretty effectively.
I'm thought that he was working on something else. I was aware of BWEM. Good to know that's something that's improved. I'm mostly familiar with the Java side of things, since I don't have enough time to learn C++, to be honest. And yeah, that area of bot development could really use some love. Allow me to talk about a little of the state of the frameworks, especially because on Basil there was a little problem with older Java bots. Basically, there is GBW API, which is an old one. I think maybe Dan did it in the like. Long ago, and it has some problems with the ladder, and no one should use it. It's older than BW Mirror even. or BW Mirror's latest update, to be more precise. There is BW Mirror, which is also not maintained anymore. Every now and then someone fixes some very little thing, but the original developer left, so I would discourage people to use it. And there is the BW API 4J, yeah, confusing name I know, which is finally actively worked upon, but time constraints are in effect, and basically there are just a few people that can do it. And it's being developed, it's getting there, but it's still not perfect. I'm using the development branch just to get something working, and it's great, but it's not complete. With that being said, can we talk about the state of the things on the C++ side?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, really, it's things are really stable, and there hasn't really been much happening with the core BW API since I started. But I think that's mainly a reflection of it being very stable. There aren't that many problems with it, and definitely, I think the focus of the development should be on the next major version instead of fixing the minor quibbles that we have right now. And as far as frameworks go, we have, I think, at least right now, we have what we need. BWEM, the map analysis tool that is, I guess, the most current one, is not perfect by any means, but I think it's good enough. And as long as we, consistently pitch in together and fix the issues that are with specific new maps that prevent them from being analyzed, it's probably enough to get us the next couple of years into the future until the issues start becoming an actual limiting problem. Of course, maybe the Facebooks and the Samsungs hit those issues before the rest of us, but hopefully they will also contribute stuff back that they may do in that space.
What kind of third-party tools or libraries would you like to see? I mean, combat simulators is a good example for this.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely space for anybody to do an even better map analyzer or combat sim. McRae is working on building placement, which is great. And yeah, Antigua mentioned earlier the build order exploration stuff, where that is also something that could be a library potentially. I mean, where it gets a bit tricky is that when you're integrating this stuff into bots, usually there's overlap. So with something like a combat simulator, you'll want it to know a bit about how you actually do your micro and that sort of thing, which does make it a bit difficult to make a general purpose library that just works with every bot. But definitely having the building blocks that we have now is a great way to start off with a really, really good foundation.
The combat simulator stuff is quite interesting because there's sort of a split divide between what I would call individual unit combat simulators and groups on combat simulators. There's really FAP and what's McGrave's called? BW something something. Someone remembers the name.
And also there is a finally named ASS.
Yes, there's... Why did we pick such... How did those names even happen? Anyway, but at any rate, there's sort of this dichotomy where you have this group that says, all right, so we're going to take a group of units and we're going to calculate when our group of units beats the other guy's group of units, so attack the retreat thing. And then you have other people who are like, well, let's just control each individual unit individually that if it should fight. And... sort of the jury's still out in some way as to which one is really better. And I would like to see a hybrid that's sort of incorporates aspects of both, because they sort of, at this point, seem to be completely divergent camps. Either we calc all the units as a group, or we run all the units individually. and there's not really a way to flow between those two. And bots have different opinions on this. Iron is very much an individual unit sort of bot. And there's also the camp of a bot like Sida that doesn't even have a combat sim. It's all the army, all the time, everywhere. And just with commands and mechanism and hard-coded rules on how to do that. So I guess there's three camps. There's the individual unit combat simulator bots, there's the group unit combat simulator bots, and we don't need no sneaking combat sim, which is Sida. And it's really an interesting thing, and there really hasn't been a lot of research in trying to combine some of these approaches in creative ways to create maybe a hybrid simulator.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would probably try to apply machine learning to that problem if I were going to, seriously work on it. Because I think, the kind of localized issues you have a bunch of units in a smallish space. You can, boil that down into a couple of thousand features, maybe. I mean, you should be able to make a neural net that what you plug in all your own units and all the enemy units and, where there's walkable terrain, and then the thing spits out, whatever, right? Whether you'll win or lose, or how much you'll win by, or what you should order all your units to do. Like, it depends on how ambitious you want to go, right? But it certainly, to me, seems like a much more solvable problem than Brood War as a whole from an ML perspective.
For my limited experience, combat simulators are great to have, but the trap lying in overusing them. Because for small-scale engagements, they were kind of okay, but in larger scale, there are always side effects, like something on the ramp, something under a tree. Did you know that under a tree you get also a mischance? And whether it's full moon and there is the Jupiter's ascendant and all kinds of crazy stuff. So yeah, I'm kind of more in the halfway between these two. So let's just try to isolate the problem and apply the combat simulator to that. But even for that, it's a hard problem, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no question that adding a combat simulator to almost any bot will make it better. I'll say almost, because who knows about Sada, right? But yeah, I mean, the reason Lacutus walks in and out of tank fire is because of the combat simulator giving different answers every few frames, right? So it does make for some really cringeworthy performances sometimes.
If you ask your combat simulator, 10 times a second if you should attack, almost regardless, in Brood War because of Fog of War, it's really easy to get a situation where it says no 95% of the time and says yes once. And that's a really hard problem. And also, no one's really done a very good integration of combat simulators and terrain either, which I think is one of the large weaknesses as well. It's really difficult.
Yeah, but it simulates human behavior perfectly. I mean, if someone asks me the same thing 10 times, I will be probably unsure as well. So it's only fair.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's actually one of the areas that it requires the most experience as a human playing Brood War. If you look at two armies and try and figure out who can win, it really takes a lot of practice and thousands of hours to be able to, in a half a second, evaluate fight or no fight.
Oh yeah, and you have a limited time, and even with today's very fast computers, you have to calculate it in a small amount of milliseconds. So yeah, you can do everything at once. Okay, as a closing thought, let's talk about, we mentioned briefly, true AI stuff. I know I get some flack for this, but machine learning, neural networks, and basically high-level AI stuff. I don't know a good phrase for this. Does Lactus have anything? Oh, I guess that. Sorry, I will edit that out. So, next question: what kind of libraries or helping tools are available for someone who wants to integrate deep learning, machine learning, or anything like that to his or her StarCraft bot?
I'm actually not really, probably not the most qualified person to answer that question, but just because I haven't really started looking at that part of it yet. But I would probably start with Torchcraft, the Facebook project that's Cherry Pie is based on, because, you know, those guys, they know what they're doing, and they've actually, you know, produced a bot that plays well using a lot of machine learning stuff. So that would probably be where I started. And otherwise, just in general with game AI, if you search for various things, you'll turn up a bunch of research papers and other interesting stuff that you can at least use for inspiration, if it's not something that can be directly applied.
Yeah, I'll second Torchcraft as well. And really, I think for another one of these podcasts at some point, it'd be really cool to have one of the Facebook people on, or an expert specifically in machine learning.
Yes, I was thinking of Torchcraft as well. I'm not aware of any specific tools for our StarCraft development at the moment. Perhaps it bears mentioning the BOSS or BOSS that got open sourced recently. I think it's a build order something something. The two S's actually stand for something else. And it was also used by Cherry Pie, if I'm correct.
Well, I'm not sure if it's been used by Cherry Pie. That would surprise me, but because the build order search system BOSS, at least, is a UL BertaBot thing, which has been out for a long time, and it generally doesn't work well in practice, just because it tries to do too much planning up front. Like the idea is you give it a bunch of goals and it spits out a build order that, you know, is for the next few minutes of game time or something like that, which doesn't really work because things change, and then, you know, you would want to reevaluate that. So if you look at Steamhammer playing Protoss or Terran, you'll see the limitations of BOSS, where it'll, you know, be building one prerequisite to some tech thing for a minute without building anything else.
BOSS is one of the first parts of Steamhammer UAB bots that authors that are modifying it try and replace. I guess I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to by this thing that's been open source, because I guess this BOSS has been open source for many years as part of Steamhammer UAB.
I probably confused it with something else, but it's good that we talked about it a little. Alright, I think with that it's time for some closing thoughts. Thank you very much for being on the show and giving some great insights into development and tournament organizing.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, and good luck everyone at SSC AIT.
Yeah, same message from here. Thanks for having me, and yeah, have fun, everyone.